You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePrayer and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Last week, months of speculation came to an end as Vodafone announced that it had won the support of Apple to distribute the iPhone in Australia, as well as the Czech Republic, Egypt, Greece, Italy, India, Portugal, New Zealand, South Africa, and Turkey later this year. For those keen to snap up what some would say is an overrated device, it looks like you may have to wait until Christmas to get your hands on it. Surprisingly, there was no mention of a 3G iPhone in any of the press releases, but logic would say that only a 3G version of the iPhone would be released in this country, wouldn't it? Respected tech reviewer Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal has predicted the 3G iPhone will go on sale in June. It could be rolled out by Apple chief executive Steve Jobs at the company's Worldwide Developers Conference on June the 9th in San Francisco, or possibly on June the 29th, the phone's first sale anniversary. The iPhone has certainly put Apple on the map. Last week on Tech Talk Radio, we spoke of the top 100 brands for 2008, in which Apple sat comfortably at number 7 and worth around about $55.206 billion. Of all the top 10 companies on the list, Apple's brand value change was 123%, more than double anybody else's, including the number one brand, Google. So it's fair to say that the iPhone has something to do with it. So does this mean that Apple has made the best phone ever to date? Many skeptics and pundits which say companies which diverse in their product range tend to become jack-of-all-trades and masters of none. But is this the case with Apple? Some Apple purists, or as Adam calls them, slobbering Mac fanatics, were heard to say that this was the phone for them as soon as the device was released last year, and without even seeing it. Others were not so sure. And what of the Nokias, Motorolas and Sony Ericssons of the world? As manufacturers of mobile communications devices, would they stand a chance with the Apple iPhone? After all, that's what they do. They don't make computers, they don't write operating systems, they just make phones. Consequently, the question needs to be asked, what's in a brand? Are people so blind to the product that they're buying because of the manufacturer behind it? Do some people just trust a brand that much? Or have we all just become so blasé about technology that we just assume it works, it's too complicated, or we just can't be bothered researching another gadget? Only time will tell.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The recently converted Mac enthusiast Adam Turner takes a look at the long-awaited iPhone. Jason Sterling from Genesis joins the studio to talk business-to-business technology. Harvey Sanchez, Online Services Strategy Manager for Microsoft, talks to us about Microsoft's Live Mesh. And Tasmanians seem to be the victims of poor internet access. First up, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra drops its next G appeal against the ACCC. Vodafone Australia set to sell Apple iPhones this year. Has Yahoo missed the boat? Talks cool with News Corp after Microsoft withdraws its takeover bid. The Reserve Bank of Australia condemns eBay's PayPal exclusivity policy. And researchers prove what we've known all along. The human brain is not designed to drive a car and talk on the phone. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra last week dropped its appeal in the federal court against the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, which found that the marketing of the NextG mobile telephone network was misleading and illegal. The ACCC claimed that Telstra had been deceiving when it claimed that NextG provided coverage equal to or better than the CDMA network. In September last year, the ACCC initiated legal proceedings against Telstra and alleged that taglines for its NextG handsets, such as "Everywhere you need it," gave consumers a false expectation of the new network's coverage. In a statement, ACCC's chairman, Mr. Graham Samuel, said that Telstra's decision to discontinue its appeal proceedings brings a welcome end to this matter and vindicates the ACCC's intervention to protect consumers from misleading marketing in the telecommunications industry. Telstra, however, still denies any wrongdoing. A spokesman last week said that Telstra's position on the outcome of the case has not changed, and we continue to stand behind our network and the advertising. Telstra must now pay the ACCC's legal costs. Vodafone have confirmed that they will be selling the Apple iPhone in Australia this year. In a press release last week, the Chief Executive Officer for Vodafone Australia, Mr. Russell Hewitt, said that Vodafone would sell Apple's handset this year, but that he couldn't provide any information on pricing or whether or not a 3G model was imminent. Mr. Hewitt also said he was unable to disclose an actual release date, but industry analysts believe it is likely to coincide with the opening of the official Apple store in the Sydney CBD around June. This is the first official confirmation from a mobile carrier that it will release the iPhone locally. Mr. Hewitt also refused to answer questions about Vodafone's product exclusivity. Analysts believe that Telstra and Optus will also offer the device. A spokesman for Apple Australia said, "Apple has nothing to announce." In the United States, the iPhone currently retails for $400 for the 8GB version and $500 for the 16GB version. Only 1 week after instant messaging and internet search giant Yahoo snubbed its nose at a takeover bid from Microsoft, talks with Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation have also reportedly cooled. Microsoft abandoned its offer to buy Yahoo for as much as $33 per share, or $47.5 billion. Now, an apparent cooling of interest on News Corporation's part has narrowed the field of options for Yahoo, which is under pressure to find an alternative solution in the face of growing angst from shareholders. With ever-increasing pressure from search juggernaut Google, Yahoo is now continuing its talks with AOL. But Mr. Jordan Rowan, founder of digital media advisory firm Clear Meadow Partners, told The Age BizTech last week that he didn't think a deal with AOL would improve Yahoo's position, and that in fact it would increase dependency on Google. Mr. Rowan said that a Yahoo-AOL merger would have much of the integration hassles of a Microsoft-Yahoo merger without the payoff to Yahoo shareholders. eBay is under pressure over its PayPal exclusivity announcement, with the Reserve Bank of Australia voicing its opposition to the policy last week. The world's largest online auction house is hoping the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission will allow it to enforce PayPal exclusivity for payments on its Australian site. But last week, the Reserve Bank of Australia made a submission to the ACCC, which suggested that allowing PayPal exclusivity to eBay would end competition with other online payment systems. eBay Australia has indicated its intention for all buyers and sellers on the site to use either PayPal or cash on delivery. If successful, this would eliminate all other popular forms of payment, including direct bank transfers, direct credit card payments, and competing transaction fund clearance systems such as the Australian-based Paymate and Centricom. Paymate and Centricom have also both argued in submissions to the ACCC that forcing all eBay users onto PayPal would create such a large user base that competitors would also be severely disadvantaged when trying to compete on auction sites other than eBay. eBay is also seeking immunity from prosecution under the Australian Trade Practices Act, claiming that enforcing exclusive use of PayPal is for the public good. Critics, however, say the move by eBay is merely an attempt to increase its PayPal customer base, while gaining extra fees for each eBay transaction through the enforced use of PayPal. And finally, researchers from the Carnegie Mellon University in the United States have proved what we suspected all along, that driving and mobile phones simply don't go hand in hand. A study has shown that multitasking, especially mobile phone use, while driving a motor vehicle, negatively affects the performance of all tasks, but especially degrades the ability to drive.
Neuroscientists from the Center for Cognitive Brain Imaging have measured the effects of mobile phone use while driving. They used a driving simulator, 29 adult subjects between the ages of 18 and 25, and functional MRI scans, which monitor brain activity by measuring blood flow changes in the brain. While having the subjects use the driving simulator, which displayed a simulated driving exercise, the researchers found that listening and talking to someone reduces the ability of the person to drive. According to the study, when people are listening and talking while driving, they are exceeding the physical ability of the brain to work effectively. Tech Talk News is compiled by Dr. Ron, and I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Optus sinks the boots into Canberra this week.
Think of the bandwidth that would be involved.
Yeah.
It cost you billions of dollars.
Yeah. Well, it was one particular carrier.
Yes.
If you're a home user or a small business, then there's very cheap and very, very effective software solutions out there.
So what's the point of high definition if it's going to look grungy and horrible?
That is a very good question.
Why do you put it in the fridge?
It's the TiVo of the Foxtel world.
That's right.
Okay.
It keeps me busy at work building spam filters.
I'm sure it does.
I'm not too stressed about that.
There's an Apple store in Choppingtown and Doncaster now, which is very nice.
I should get out more often, shouldn't I?
What is the point? There is no point. It will not work here, will it?
No.
It will not work here.
Let's ponder that, shall we?
Essentially, what you're doing is you're buying the service to get the program going.
I actually gave up on Anna. I wanted Shelby since she wanted to take me to the bedroom. But, having said that...
This is why I always dread this segment.
Took the words out of my mouth.
You know what you're talking about?
Absolutely no idea whatsoever.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Thanks for being in, listening range of us this evening, wherever you are around the country, around the world, whether in your iPod, on the train, who knows, but thanks for joining us. The panel this evening consists of absolutely everybody. We've run out of microphones. JD's in. He's going to talk. He's brought a retro Mac in, although it seems to have done a bit of an upgrade since I last saw it a few moments ago. Maybe he's gone back to the new one. Dr. Ron's here this evening, and Adam Turner's come in because he couldn't resist the iPhone breaking news technology, which is all happening out there. How are you all, gentlemen?
I'm very well. I'd just like to say that I've registered a company today. I'm going to start selling 3G iPhones in a few months.
Are you?
Yeah, along with
When's
everybody
your press
else.
Release coming out?
And how short will it be?
Adam, what, Telstra's one was two words.
No, Telstra hasn't put one out yet, but Vodafone put their press release out last week, and it was about 50 words, I think. Optus put theirs out today, and it was 35. So Telstra's the only one left, and I think their press release is going to be two words. Us too.
Well, Telstra last year said to Apple to go and make socks or something. Didn't
you? Nah, stick to your knitting. I'm waiting to use that in a blog post. When Telstra put their foot out of place, it'll be Apple tells Telstra to stick to their knitting.
Yes, I've seen those socks. You can buy them. They're very expensive. You go into some of those shops and there's a little green thing hanging on the wall, which is only, you know, for your iPod-y thing.
Yeah, and they're locked down.
Your eye sock,
you can only wear them on one people's feet.
One people.
Look at those little socks you get for your mobile phones to keep them warm in the winter. I've got one of those.
Have you?
Yeah.
Does it work? Does it keep it warm?
I suppose it does. I never asked.
Well, exactly. Technology.
That was money well spent.
Absolutely.
It was a freebie. All right.
Oh, goodness me. Well, there's been lots happening this week. We're going to get into it very shortly. But first up, Dr. Ron has... we're all going to get a coffee while you go through the correspondence this week.
Oh, I've got truckloads of correspondence this week.
Well, I'm getting more in too.
I can hear it going ding in the background there.
Yeah, good.
Hello to new forum users. In the last week, we've had the following people join the forum. WizKid. Hello, WizKid. And also Mountain Wombat in the Snowy Mountains, which is very exciting. We've got a listener up in the snowy. So
that's
great.
Good.
Yes.
You could ask him if his phone stays warm with his... Does he have a sock on his phone?
And he must have something, surely. Ben from Tasmania says, "Hi, guys. Over the past week, things have been really bubbling away here down in Tasmania with regards to Telstra's monopoly of the fibre running across Bass Strait."
Yes. We consider ourselves exceptionally lucky that we got your email, Ben.
Yes. He points us at a website for updates, www.digitaltasmania.org. So that's a good one to have a look at.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about that later tonight. Poor old Tassie.
Poor old Tassie. A listener, James, says, "Hi, guys. I thought you guys would like this post, an understandable description of Microsoft Mesh." And he's pointed us to a blog post. Thanks for the update there, James. We're going to be talking about Microsoft Mesh a little bit later.
We are. We've actually got Microsoft talking about it. Harvey Sanchez is going to have a chat to us. I spoke to him during the course of the week and I found out what on earth Mesh is.
Is he going to dispel all the myths and and hopefully enlighten us to some extent.
I don't know, but we all get 5 gig in the cloud.
That sounds good.
Does that sound exciting?
5 gigs, good.
Yeah, good.
Tony says, I had the unfortunate task of having to attend hospital for an operation and did not have the chance to correctly divert the phone at my office. As I pay for a business line, I thought there would be additional services provided. However, this was not to be. After being transferred 5 times, I was told the diversion to be organised by Telstra to another Telstra-provided service, being a virtual message bank service, would incur a charge of $55. I was on the phone for over 70 minutes to be told that it was not Telstra's responsibility to for customers in medical circumstances to divert telephones, and he got charged. He's not very happy. He thinks that perhaps Sol should try and ask or wait on hold for basic Telstra services and put up with the usually untrained staff. Oh, he gets quite angry.
So what happened? I'm sort of a bit of...
There you go,
Tony's... He went somewhere and he had his phone diverted.
Tony unfortunately had to go to hospital for an operation.
Yeah.
And he thought that seeing as he had a business telephone service, Telstra would remote divert it for him to another number. And they said, no, get up out of your hospital bed, go and divert it yourself, or we're going to ping you $55 to do it.
Oh, okay. Have you heard of remote access? That's $5. Just get them to connect that and then you can do it yourself.
Well, he didn't explain that to him. That's not very good.
I know. This is the dilemma with telcos, isn't it?
But Optus, I don't think, can even do that, because I know when I renovated my house, I had all the wiring pulled out and everything, and I wanted to divert the phone, and I rang Optus and they said, no, we physically can't do it. The only way it can be done is from your premises.
Oh, what a load of nonsense.
So I had to get out the phone, and I had a phone with the wires hanging out, and then I had the wires hanging out of the wall, and I'm there, like, holding this wire to this wire and this wire to this wire, and then dialing with my nose to try and divert the phone. I got it to work in the end, but I wasn't thrilled about it.
It's funny you should mention that. I think, when Optus have their resold product, I think, and I'm going from memory here, that they don't have access to that technology that Telstra does. But also, having said that, if you go into your online billing with Telstra, I know, Dr. Ron, you've had all sorts of fun and games with the online billing system in the course of years.
I have.
I think you can actually do it there, too, if you go and set up a diversion when you pay your bill. You can see your services and you can do diversion, I think.
Interesting.
It might have been a mobile one that I saw, but it might be landlines too.
Tony, have a quick look at that one. That might help if you get online billing set up.
$55 for the sake of...
Just doing one diversion, that's pretty rich. Hey, Ken writes, so I've never heard anyone address this. Why is it in both the Windows and Mac worlds, the up arrow makes things go down on the screen and down is up? Left goes right.
JD, we'll throw that one over to you.
And right goes left.
He's with the Mac.
Tiling horizontally actually tiles things vertically. Vertical tiles horizontally. The Windows world adds one more backwards thing. To stop the computer, you have to click the start button. JD?
Well, that's Windows.
Indeed.
Very good.
Yes, I never thought of it that way, but it does. But I guess you're scrolling down the document by hitting the down arrow, but to do that, it moves it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's more to do with usability. So I want to go down, so I hit the down arrow. So physically what happens on the screen is the reverse, but it's the intent, I think, that's important. I think that's what it is.
Thanks for that, Ken. And we've got one last quick one from Simon. Simon tells us there's an interesting article on page 3 of today's Herald Sun.
That's a Melbourne newspaper, for those wanting to know.
It is, stating that soon a valid SIM card will have to be in a mobile phone to be able to make a 000 or 112 call due to ongoing abuse of the service.
Is that good? Is that bad? Normally, if you come across a mobile phone, it's going to have a SIM in it anyway. Like, surely, the only reason why you wouldn't have a SIM in it is the one in the kitchen cupboard and the kids have found it, turned it on and started pressing numbers.
You'd think so.
So it's probably a good thing,
A good thing. I don't know. Tell us what you think. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Thank you to everyone for all their feedback this week.
Yeah, it's been good. Keep it coming. Gee, it was 10 minutes, wasn't it?
It was. I told you.
We got a break very short.
Yeah, I've lost 10 through tonight. Dr. Ron's mailbag.
All right. Just an apology this evening, too. We were promoting to have Jason in this evening, but unfortunately, we got our wires crossed. And that's what happens when you reschedule and reschedule and reschedule. Somewhere along the lines, you lose that email that is the vitally important bit. So if you're tuning in for Jason, he'll be on soon, coming soon.
He's like very keen. He'll be in.
He will. Yep. Don't you worry about that. Let's talk about Windows XP Service Pack 3 because it's fairly topical and hot at the moment. Many news things out today stating that there's been, like, chaos, pandemonium right across the world because of XP. In particular, there's a bit of a ruckus about the AMD chipset not handling the Windows XP Service Pack 3 too well.
That's pretty bad considering the amount of people who'd be using that.
Well, I must admit, I brazenly went into the unknown and I loaded up on two machines, including Exhibit...
Oh, you've done two
Exhibit,
now.
Exhibit B here, says he pointed. Good for radio, isn't it? Just pointing to the laptop here on the desktop. This machine here, which is a AMD chip set device, is a laptop and running on XP 3 without a problem whatsoever. Also, at the office, I have a machine with AMD chipset on it as well, and that also went across flawlessly. The scary part is it makes the screen very small when you install it, and it comes with an installer this time too, which is unusual. Normally you just run the XE and it goes off and does things, but this one came with an installer. So in the Tech Talk Radio camp, I can not fault XP3 at this point in time, but others have not quite so speaking
highly. The general rule is don't touch it until people stop complaining about it.
There you go. I'm not complaining about it. Works.
Well, no, you're not, but there are other people who are.
I'll wait you see what else.
Yeah, if you see reports of people saying it's a dud, wait. And then when people stop saying it's a dud, wait a little bit longer. Then try it.
Okay.
Don't be that guy to do it first. There are poor people who get paid to bang their heads against the wall and try technology first. If that's not your job, don't put up with it. Just wait until they get it right.
Wait until the dust settles.
Yeah,
is what
wait
you're
until
saying,
the dust settles. Yeah.
Well, I must admit, the machines I loaded on weren't mission critical machines, but I was very curious to see how it went.
Yeah,
it went,
your XP2 machines should be doing your SP2 machines should be doing okay.
Yep.
So there shouldn't be any urgent need to put the next service pack on there. So don't do it until people say it's all right.
The only difference that I've noticed. Everyone said there's a massive speed improvement. Well, I can't say that I've seen that. The only thing that is a little different that I noticed out of the box is the remote network connections in it. But it also, it is allegedly talks to Server 2008 really well in a business environment because it brings a lot of the security that Vista offers when it talks to Server 2008 down to the XP platform. So,
are you using Server 2008 at work?
I've got it, but I haven't loaded it up yet. It's sitting there. I went to a Microsoft gig not so long back, and they said, here, have Server 2008. I said, good, thanks.
That was nice.
I'll add it to the collection. I'll just put it in the corner and put it on the shelf until, as Adam says, it's been out for a little while and it works well. And then I will load it up and have a bit of a play. But I am interested in the server core technology, which it offers and things like that. But if you're interested in that, have a listen to one of our past shows because we actually had Microsoft on talking about it.
I see, just before you go on, I see that one of the senior Microsoft engineers has said that if you install Service Pack 3, you can't downgrade your version of Internet Explorer. So if you've decided to dabble with IE 8 beta, you can't go back to IE 7 or 6, in fact.
Ooh, really?
Ugly.
Actually, the story I heard was slightly different, if I may.
Who's that voice? In my headphones.
Hello, Graham Callaghan. He wasn't on the panel when I introduced him. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dr. Graham Callaghan.
He's a lurker.
Apparently, the SP3 only works with IE7, so SP3 won't even install if you've got the beta of IE8 installed.
Well, how are they going to fix that then, when IE8 ripples through the force upgrade department?
It'll work then, but they're not liking having the latest service pack and the beta web browser on the same machine. And it also forces you to IE7, so you can't downgrade to IE6 after you install the service pack 3.
Oh, goodness me.
So you're stuck with one choice of Microsoft browser if you go to Service Pack 3.
And if you've got a Mac, you haven't got any problems at all, isn't that right, JD?
Absolutely.
Or stick with Firefox.
The sun is shining, the birds are singing.
Speaking of the sun is shining, there's a little bird tweeting at the moment. Well, tell me about this phone call you got from Steve Jobs during the course of the week.
How do you know about that? Did I... I have an iPhone at the moment, and it rang the other day, and a man in an American voice said, "Hi, it's Steve Jobs here. I'm calling from Apple to see how you like your iPhone." And, of course,
yes.
Thinking about it now, it was obvious that it didn't sound like him, but it sounded enough like him that when it caught you on the hop, you're like, uh-oh, what's going on here? And
what have I said on my blog? What have I said on the radio?
I've been talking to some PR people from Telstra, actually, and mentioned to one of them that I had an iPhone at the moment. So I guessed it was them, and I said, "Oh, this is such and such from Telstra." No, it's not. And we kept talking. I thought, okay. And he said, "So, where did you get your iPhone from?" And it came from a friend of a friend who imports them and hacks them. So I thought, I don't really want to tell him that at this point. So I was like,
given that he's got my phone number.
Yeah. So he's got this magically fell out of the sky, I said. He said, "Oh, that's very interesting." And then I said, "So what time is it there in California right now?" And he got it right. He said, "Oh, it's about 11 o'clock at night." I said, "You're working very late." He said, "Well, that's how I became so successful." And so he strings me on for a couple of minutes, asking me where I got it from and what I think of it and what network I'm running it on.
And I'm thinking a million miles an hour. Who is it? What am I going to do? What are they trying to find out? How does someone know? Yeah, I was pretty sure it wasn't, but who is it? And then he starts laughing and hands the phone over to my wife.
Oh, no.
Who has got a guy from work with an American accent to ring me up and said, she said, can you do me a favor? Do you know anything about iPhones? And he said, no, I don't know if I'm the right person for this. She said, oh, it's a practical joke. He said, I'm in. Straight away. He said, what am I going to do? So, it was a ripper.
Anyway, yes,
did you get your wife back?
No, I'll have to think about that.
Oh, dear. I hope we haven't started anything.
We may have.
We're getting a volley of emails coming across later this evening. Speaking of Apple, email in from Mark, who's a regular Tech Talk panelist. He just hasn't been on this year. He's currently living in Boston. Apparently, the Apple shop's opening up in Boston very shortly. So we'll probably get one here soon, I would think. So there you go. If you're listening in Boston, we do have some people that listen in Boston, a couple of them, probably two or three.
JD, you said there's one just up the road here at the Doncaster shopping center in Melbourne.
There's a reseller in Doncaster.
It's a reseller.
There's not a shop yet. We haven't got any.
But there's one opening in Sydney in June or July
29th,
and
isn't
they think that might be the Australian iPhone launch. Yeah. They might tie them all together.
Yeah,
but everybody's got their theories.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Telstra while we're talking about all the major companies. They're withdrawing their Next G appeal. Remember how they got their misleading consumers? They decided to take the rap now.
Finally.
Is it because they realise that A, they can't win, or B, that it's just not worth spending the... They had to put their $5 million into a deposit as opposed to actually defend it in court type sort of thing.
But they're still saying they've done nothing wrong. They're just saying it's in the best interests of shareholders and the general public that, seeing as the network is CDMA is closed
stuff
now...
Stuff about the general public.
Or their shareholders, for that matter.
They are
the general public.
They've said, seeing as CDMA is closed now, it's no longer in anyone's interests that we actually continue this... this dispute, so we're just going to...
It's a distant memory.
This dispute was over the footprint of NextG versus CDMA.
Everywhere you need it, sort of, maybe some funds.
Yeah, look, you're probably familiar with my scenario, too. We've got a property where there's a big red patch which says Telstra reckons handheld, but can't get it within Cooee. And anyway, I still haven't got that phone call. I know that's what you're going to ask Dr. Ron. I saw you going there. So.
The Telstra spokesperson said that Telstra's position on the outcome of the case has not changed, and we continue to stand behind our network and the advertising.
So really?
That's not sheer bloody-mindedness, then I don't know what is. But anyhow, that's good. Everyone can move on now because they've got the appeal.
Now, you're a Facebook user, aren't you?
I am.
Have you heard about these new safeguards that allegedly are going to be applied to the world's largest Facebook?
Do they stop your people sending you stupid things on Facebook?
I don't know. If you sign up and you're silly enough to go on those sort of things, you just get what you deserve, really, don't you?
What would be the point of Facebook without those things? That's all it does.
That's exactly right. Facebook, the world's second largest social networking website, will add more than 40 new safeguards to protect young users from sexual predators and cyber bullies. And Dr. Ron, Attorney General from several...
Hello.
Well, I know. I've seen your Facebook thing. Scary.
A little questionnaire. Are you a cyber bully? Yes, no.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to sign up with that question, then they won't let you in.
I didn't realise people needed protection from me.
Oh, really?
That's a bit unfortunate.
The changes include banning convicted sex offenders from the site, limiting older users' ability to search online for subscribers under 18, and building a task force seeking ways to better verify users' age and identities. Well, I don't know. In this country, I would have thought it'd be fairly hard to find that information about convicted sex offenders.
You're living in a fantasy land.
That's exactly right.
Silly. How are they going to do it? How are they going to enforce that?
Yes. We've got global boundaries and databases which are probably well out of date and all that sort of stuff too, I would have thought.
Yeah, but what's stopping a child sex offender? What? They're too stupid to get a new email address?
Well, so long as it's an email address, yes, exactly right. What is stopping them?
To move to another computer?
And a Gmail and get another one.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Sign up with another provider, get a different IP address, and off
you
go.
Exactly.
The RBA, the Reserve Bank of Australia, joins the chorus against eBay PayPal exclusivity claim. You know, we've spoken about this over the course of time. People are getting their noses out of joint about the fact that now they can only, well, very shortly in Australia, you'll only be able to use the PayPal payment method on eBay.
This is for everybody. I think I said last week, erroneously, that it was for power sellers.
Was it?
And people who are running online stores, but they want to do it for everybody.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
And there's some exclusions for large type transactions like cars and boats and things like that. But
it's a $5,000 threshold.
$5,000? I thought it was $10,000.
I heard it was 10 because that's the international transaction limit that eBay imposes on it. But the RBA, the Reserve Bank of Australia, has joined a growing throng of PayPal and eBay competitors and detractors opposing eBay's push to have the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission look the other way whilst the while it seeks to enforce PayPal exclusivity on the Australian arm of the world's largest auction site. So, you know, here we go. Another one to add to the fuel to the fire, I guess, more the point.
The question, it's interesting why they tried this first in Australia. Because some might say, you know, our ACCC is so piss weak, for want of a better word, that they thought they'd get away with it. But maybe they should have picked a country where they'd have even less safeguards than we do. It's just interesting why they tried it here.
It's very frustrating. Adam and I were talking about this just before the show started. If you want to make a fairly small transaction and you're happy doing direct credits or direct bank transfers between your account and the other person's account, then why wouldn't you? It doesn't cost anything. But now not only are you going to be forced to use PayPal and you do have to pay for the transaction, you're also paying for the transaction through the eBay as well. So you're paying twice, aren't you?
And it all goes back to eBay.
And all goes back to eBay because they own PayPal. It's very, very frustrating.
I've noticed in some of the ads, though, in the last couple of weeks that people are putting their bank details actually in the ad and saying, I've signed up for a PayPal account, but pay me via direct.
Maybe they'll report to...
They'll get onto that, I'm sure. They're not silly. They'll go through and go, haha, delete.
You're gone. Bye.
But what's just stopping you having an email conversation with them and setting it up that way?
Well, that's true, isn't it?
You could, but then you're not going to be protected with eBay's policies.
But who is?
And but you're not anyway if you don't go through PayPal, so...
Okay. All right. The cloud, Microsoft, this is going to be big.
Mesh.
Yeah.
Mesh.
You had an email there before. Did you say someone had a good explanation site as to how mesh works?
They did. It was a blog site. I can read it out. Better still, we'll put a link maybe on the forum or on the website. But it's a good explanation as to how it works. There's a lot of confusion at the moment about it.
It's in beta at the moment, and it's English only. It's going to go live in the not-too-distant future. I did ask Harvey when it was going to go live, and we got the traditional Microsoft. When it's ready, it'll go in no uncertain terms. Wouldn't commit to a date. He just said, because it's English, it'll roll out here first. Well, that's great. So, but in essence, what it's going to let you do, Dr. Ron and others, is share information from software applications you have, like email, sort of address books, anything you want to share with people. There's a public and a private sector in your cloud. You get 5 gig in the cloud. And then it allows you to, you know, your PDA or your mobile phone will then sync via the internet and pull down your contacts. So you put a contact in your one at home and all of a sudden it appears in your mobile phone.
Google.
I'm glad you coughed and mentioned that. So
Adam's got a Google, a frog in his throat.
Absolutely. So, but here we go again. Anyway, I did actually have a chat to Adam Sanchez, as I said, from Microsoft Australia. And I asked him the very question, what on earth is mesh? And this is what he had to say.
Microsoft Live Mesh is basically a new service that Microsoft just announced. It's in technology preview. Basically what that means is pre-beta. So let's just put awareness out there that it's not currently available for most people yet because we're in development, but we wanted to give people a preview as to what we're trying to do. But basically what Live Mesh does, if you think about your digital world today and you think about the type of devices that you might have and the type of data that you might have in different types of devices, it basically allows you to really unify all of those devices together into your own personal mesh. So, for example, if you have, you know, a PC at home and a PC in the office and a media device or a music device or, you know, you might have a mobile phone and you've got data spread across all of those devices. Well, with the power of the internet, you have the ability to integrate those all together. So, for example, if I wanted to share documents that are sitting on one machine, I'll be able to get access to those documents from whatever device I might have inside my mesh. So you can collaborate with all of your data, with all of your devices, and also have the ability to share that with other people as well, with friends and colleagues. So you can then share devices and share data that you might have on your mesh to other people, and you'll be able to get access to them as well.
So how does it work?
Yeah, well, it basically works by integrating creating a live mesh account, which is basically using a live ID. So if today you're running Hotmail or Instant Messenger, you pretty much have a live ID already. And basically what you do is you start adding devices to your mesh. You get a graphical interface that allows you to incorporate your PCs, your mobile phone or your media device. You know, we work cross-platform, so you can have access to a Macintosh device or an iPod or a BlackBerry device, and have it all integrated into your mesh. You start adding those devices onto your mesh. Then what happens is that you start sharing the documents that you want to share across your mesh as well, and you can create folders. You can cut and paste documents onto it, or drag and drop documents to it, any type of files. And you'll be able, once they're in your mesh, then they're accessible from anywhere. So an example of that would be, I use a Windows mobile device. I have the ability to run PowerPoint from my mobile device. I can connect my mobile device to an overhead projector, and I don't have to carry my PC with me. So I can do my whole PowerPoint presentation. But instead of having to carry the document on my device, I have the ability to get access to it from my mesh. And this is where we have this whole element of collaboration working together.
All right. So how big is the mesh? Do we have any limitations? Like, you're talking about PowerPoint presentations. My line of work, I talk about video files, considerably larger in file size. Obviously, there's broadband considerations when it comes to getting the files from, I guess, the PC or the device to the mesh. Are there any limitations with how much sort of files you can move around?
Well, see, what we do with mesh is that we create what's known as a live desktop. And in the live desktop, which is basically storage on the cloud for you, we give you up to 5 gigabytes of storage. Basically, if you wanted to post something up there and you wanted to get access to it from, for example, a mobile device. But the reality is also is that, you know, you have storage on your local PCs, and what we're not storing everything on the cloud. We're storing things that are sitting on your PC as well. We're just sharing those with your other devices that are connected to the internet. So you can have as many files as you like based on, you know, the size of your disk, and you still be able to get access to that. So, you know, we provide you a cloud-based storage service, 5 gigabytes, and you can put stuff there, but that doesn't restrict you from how many files you can put up, because ultimately what you're doing is you're sharing your hard disk of all your devices on your mesh.
All right, we're sharing some information here. Maybe it's a little bit personal. Maybe it's a little bit business sensitive. How secure is the cloud?
Well, everything that you do in regards to your own mesh is basically controlled by you. So you're the only one that has access to that based on your authentication. So we provide a live ID. It's your authentication for access to your mesh, similarly to the same ID that you use to get access to your Hotmail account or to your Instant Messenger account. And so with that authentication, you're in control of your own mesh. Now, if you decide to share documents or you share your mesh with other people, then you can put in the amount of restrictions, access rights, and so forth around who can get access to what. Are they able to get open it? Are they able to download it? Are they able to share it themselves? And you can control that from within your own mesh. But again, it all depends on how many people you have on it, what they want to do, but ultimately you're in control of all the security aspects of the things that you share to other people. But when you're connected to it on your own, you can, you know, it's, again, authenticating yourself for access to your own mesh. No one else can see that.
What sort of software do we need to connect to it? You mentioned before remote desktop. Do we need to download an application to run on our devices before it can connect?
Yeah, so what basically happens when you create a live mesh account, you're basically install a little application on your machine. This at the moment works with Windows, but we are working towards supporting the Macintosh and other platforms as well. But you download a little piece of software, and this piece of software just allows you to have access to your mesh. It controls the way you connect to your mesh, how you share documents, and also what other people are doing, because you might be part of other people's meshes as well. So you just load a piece of software. Once that's installed, you have access to your desktop, to your live desktop, and to the things that you want to create inside your mesh. And then basically you have the ability to get access to that from any browser. So you need to have that instance once, but if you, for example, go into a kiosk, you don't have to install any piece of software. You're just accessing your mesh. And that basically allows you to do that from any browser, from any device, as long as it's connected to the internet.
So what about the not-so-modern mobile phones? And I don't mean the PDA types or the devices running, say, Windows CE, for example. What about a Sony Ericsson or a Nokia, which basically has Java running on it? Can we access the net using a little Java application, providing it can connect to the net?
Ultimately, we will support multiple types of devices and multiple types of platforms. And absolutely, you know, if at some point there is an application that can run and it can connect to the internet, we'll be able to connect to it. We'll be able to share it. And that's basically what you're doing. You're looking at all your digital environments that you might have. And if I look at myself, for example, which I kind of feel like I live a digital lifestyle from at work to at home to, you know, how I am in my car. I want to have all of my devices that I have spread around connected and having the ability to share those documents. Another good example of it is the fact that, you know, I work from home quite a bit. Well, I don't need to take my work PC home. I'll be able to connect to my work PC from home. So I have access to my whole entire operating system from work from within my home PC, allowing me to get the same level of access to the things that I do from home. And you'll be able to do that from multiple devices, and that's ultimately the aim. So we want to make sure we can support sort of certain ones at the moment, and then looking forward in the future, we'll support other types of devices and other types of platforms.
All right, let's look at it from a business point of view. One of the great things in business these days is the Office suite of products with Exchange Server, where you get to have personal contact folders and you have shared contact folders or public folders. With the cloud, can we actually take our public contact folders and store them up there so that when we are out in the field or remote, that we can be just like working at the office and, oh, I know where that phone number is, or I know where that email contact is. Is this part of what the cloud is going to do, or what Live Mesh is going to do, allow us to share that information that is part of an application or part of a database of a shared application?
Yeah, in fact, share the whole application, and that's what we're trying to do as well. One of the key elements to this, and one of the great productivity elements to it, is the fact that you have the ability to share an entire application. So, you know, you don't need to be running a certain application from a certain PC if you don't have it installed. You'll be able to get to share that and get access to that from any device that you're connected to your own mesh. And in your example around, contact lists and address books, et cetera, is a typical way of people wanting, or a typical application that people would want to get access to if they're on the road all the time. And they don't want to carry it with them. Having the ability to connect to it is critical. And I think those are the sort of elements that we will put in place and we'll be able to do as part of this technology. Because it's not just about data or files, it's about the applications that, you know, that keep you productive or keep you entertained. And those are the kind of things that we definitely want to make sure are provided. And in the technology preview that we have today, we already have the capability of sharing applications across the mesh. And having access to those. So those things are already embedded into the technology already, so we're going to see more of those moving forward once the product becomes more widely available.
Harvey, it sounds pretty good. Are there any associated costs with this service?
Well, the cost is free. We will be providing this for free to consumers on the internet. It's part of our Live portfolio of products. If you're familiar with things like Live SkyDrive, for example, which is our storage on the cloud, and Live Workspaces, which is our sort of collaborative service that we have on the cloud as well. These are all free products, free services. Live Mesh will also be a free service. And there's a benefit for consumers on this that we see. Obviously, is the ability for them to integrate all of those multiple digital devices that they are dependent on every day, but having a consistent way of getting access to them and collaborating together on those, and then sharing those with friends. There's huge potential for consumers to be very productive and very entertained, and so we want to make sure we can provide those to them for free.
And finally, too, when do we get it? When does it go live?
Well, it's in technology preview, which basically what that means is that it's pre-beta. We hope it is English at the moment, which is a good thing, because if it is English, Australia will be one of those countries that gets it pretty quickly. We don't have to wait for localization in regards to language. So once it becomes beta, which we're hoping will very, very shortly, we will certainly be part of that beta program. And then then after that, it'll be commercially available to anybody. So, this is something that we've been working on actually for the last 2 years. And it's something that we're very excited about. And the fact that we even announced a technology preview, which we don't normally do before it becomes available commercially, that means that we're really close and we're really excited. So hopefully you'll be hearing more about that shortly.
Harvey, thank you very much for joining us on Tech Talk Radio this evening.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for your time.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So time to put your head in the clouds, boys. You're going to give it a go when it comes out?
That's a good interview with Harvey there.
Yes. Yes, he was. Yes, it was good. Well, now we know what
It is. And when it's going to be launched is to be advised. So watch this space, I guess. We'll tell you all about it.
If I keep all my documents in my documents, my computer...
That's a good place to keep them.
Well, there's a level of not just computer security, but physical security. I know if the computer's turned off, it's locked up in the house, and no one's got access to it. And there's a certain peace of mind that goes with that. But if I shut down all my computers and go to bed or get up and go to work in the morning, but there's all... The data's all out there, all my personal information. It's being hosted somewhere.
Well, what kind of personal information would you put on it, though?
Well, you put everything on it. Everything that you currently have, all of your emails, all of your appointments. You don't have to, but that's how they envisage it working, so it's everything's accessible from anywhere.
Don't you run a server at home? Don't take this the wrong way, but how important do you think you are? Who the hell cares? Who's going to break in and look at Dr. Ron's email? Mine or Andrew's. I'm just saying people are paranoid, but they stop to think, you don't work for the CIA, and the CIA don't care about you. So, you know.
I understand what you're saying. I am not important, but my bank account number is important to people, and my Visa card number is important to people. And there's information which people...
I wouldn't be putting that information in there. You've got to be sensible about what you put in there.
Doing on Tuesday...
I'm happy to put my contacts there. I reckon it's going to be great. I wish I had Adam's number, and there it is in my phone. Because
it's convenience. Yeah. Privacy is all about convenience versus security, and you will find it so convenient to keep your contact list on there.
And desktops. You know, the work desktop as opposed to the home desktop.
Yeah, no, the desktop is... The physical desktop is dying. It's dead, I reckon. It's all going to live in the cloud.
I think
it's a few years away, but...
You've hit it on the head there as well. It's the balance of usability versus security. It's a very delicate balance, isn't it? And you've got to find what's right for you.
Don't put your Visa card details in there, but put your contact list in there.
The other interesting, I think you alluded to it last week, Dr. Ron, too, is we're going back to the original model of where computing originally started. Yeah. That is, there's no intelligence on the client's end of the machine. All the power and all the server technology and all that's Microsoft and Google and all those guys are going to start doing that. Or even, I think we'll talk a little bit about this down the track too. You know, some of the larger companies are going to be offering sort of services online where you'd log in and use spreadsheets, and they're doing it now, aren't they?
Yeah, the personal desktop computer actually set us back. What we had before that, and this is what my father-in-law works with computers, and this is what he says to me, that we were better off the way we were before, and then once we spread everything out, it slowed everything down, and now we're suddenly getting back to, hey, maybe that wasn't such a bad idea. 20 years later.
Now that we've got better networks, with the tiny little networks that we used to have, the serial networks and so forth, you couldn't run these sort of virtual engines the way that people are doing it now. So it's really the broadband access and faster cable networks.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thorn in our side at the moment. Yes, hello, Tassie. That's the thorn in our side, isn't it? It's broadband. It's just not broad enough for what we want to use in shuffling huge amounts of files around.
The other thing that goes hand in hand with what JD's saying is access from anywhere. We're no longer tied to one computer. We can carry a communications device in our hand, or we can log on through mobile networks, and we don't have to be in one physical location to get access.
And I guess for those that are security conscious, and I am to a degree, I never actually thought about me being that way before of this conversation, but I use my PDA to sync at work, and I bring it home and sync at home with it's a PC at work and an Apple at home. So I use my PDA to sync everything where I go. Now, if I lost my PDA, I'd be in strife because my tool would disappear. But I carry all the information with me from one point to another, and again, it doesn't matter what computer I connect to at each end, I take the information with me rather than relying on the network for it. Which is just as well tonight.
You can do it the other way, though, and use a Google Calendar. You can sync the Mac to the Google Calendar and then sync the PC to the Google Calendar. So it still ends up on both ends, but you're not carrying it around. Or you could do both. You could carry it around and have it in the cloud.
True. Well, lots to look forward to, really. I must admit, I use a third-party program at the moment to sync my office contacts and appointments to one at home, because I'd be lost without that, because you want to log in and see what you're doing first thing Monday morning rather than ring work or driving into work. You've got it there at your fingertips. Now, we're going to take a break in just a minute, because we have been going on a lot tonight. Adam's here to talk about the iPhone. He has brought one into the studio in the living, breathing flesh that an iPhone is. There's lots of news in relation to iPhones very shortly. Yes, as we alluded to in the early part of the show, everyone's getting in on the act. You'll be able to get them at the Corner Milk Bar very shortly. Their press releases will be out sometime.
There's Mac operating systems tonight are giving the other operating systems a run for their money in the studio here, because we've got iPhones, we've got MacBooks, and Andrew and I have got
That's all right.
PC laptops, haven't
we? I'm waiting for my call from Steve Jobs. He'll get me over the line. He'll say, why aren't you?
What if he's got...
Yeah, well, Lid bumps into him in Cupertino over there because she shops down the road from where he lives, apparently.
I wonder if he's got a feedback number.
I don't know. Be very interesting to see. Anyway, we're going to take a break and get a coffee. We'll be back with the iPhone after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ryan, Adam Turner, Justin Dunlop, and Graham Callaghan somewhere. I think he's gone out to get a power supply or something. Doing some maintenance as we speak here on the Tech Talk Radio studios. Anyway, we're going to talk about iPhones. Adam has one.
It's coming.
It's coming, apparently. Everyone's putting out press releases and all that sort of stuff. Now,
everyone's reselling them. We're going to start selling them on the Tech Talk Radio website, I think.
With a coffee cup.
Value add. We'll buy a coffee mug, we'll throw in an iPhone.
Yep. So is it really all that it's cracked up to be? Adam was just popped in this evening, so we've got his view from the couch here, all queued up and ready to go. So we'll go from the live Adam to the virtual Adam,
and then back to the live,
and then back to the live Adam. Yes, are you surprised that it's taken this long to come out, Adam? Just out of curiosity, that you know, 12 months
really.
It's taken.
It's the sort of standard Apple procedure, really.
Okay. All right. Here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The next phase of my Mac transformation has begun. I'm falling in love with the iPhone. Last week, Vodafone announced that we'll start selling the iPhone in Australia later this year, and the big question is whether we'll see a 3G iPhone in Australia, but I'll let Andrew and the others on the panel talk about that. I've recently been playing with a US iPhone hacked to run in Australia as research for an upcoming magazine feature. So I thought I'd tell you a bit about it. I know there's been a lot of hype about the iPhone and I don't want to be yet another slobbering Mac fanatic, but the iPhone is amazing and I'm pretty sure I want one. The iPhone is a very sexy looking phone, but beauty needs to be more than skin deep for a gadget to impress me. When it comes to functionality and the user experience, the iPhone delivers in spades. Unlike my clunky iMate Jazz Jam running the cumbersome Windows Mobile 6, the iPhone's interface is easy to use and you don't feel like you're constantly fighting with the phone. All the icons are nice and big, so there's no need for a stylus, and none of the menus are more than 2 or 3 levels deep, so it's easy to find your way around without an instruction manual. If I had to list 3 quick features that impressed me about the iPhone, the on-screen keyboard would have to be one. I always thought an on-screen keyboard would be no match for the big slide-out keyboard on my Jazz Jam, but I was wrong. In some applications, you can even turn the iPhone sideways to make the keyboard bigger. The keys look a little too small for stubby fingers or thumbs, but the trick to typing on an iPhone is to forget about that and just type. The touch-sensitive screen is surprisingly good at figuring out which key you press, but the iPhone's secret weapon is its excellent corrective text feature. If you make a mistake, it takes an educated guess as to which word you meant and substitutes it automatically. It's remarkably accurate, and without it, I doubt I could match the speed at which I type on the Jazz Jam. Of course, the corrective text means you start getting sloppy when you're typing, so when you hit a word that isn't in the dictionary, things can get messy. The iPhone's second impressive feature would have to be the Safari web browser. The iPhone has a beautifully crisp display, but Safari's usability comes from the ease at which you can zoom in and out on a page. Zooming in is as simple as tapping an area, but what's really impressive is Safari analyzes the page and takes a guess at what you're trying to see. If you click on a column of text, for example, it zooms in until that column of text fills the screen nicely, so you don't need to scroll sideways to read. You can also use a two-finger pinch to zoom in and out.
The third feature that caught my eye is the iPhone's SMS threaded conversation feature, which shows SMS conversations in a list, just like an instant messaging application. That's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the iPhone's usefulness. Sure, you can do this stuff on other phones, but you'll struggle to find one that does it as smoothly as the iPhone. Of course, if you're already a Mac user, the iPhone plays beautifully with your computer. While the iPhone is exciting, until we get an Aussie version, you need to install a few software cracks on it before it will run on local networks. You also need to install cracks if you want to install third-party software that doesn't have Apple's blessing, and these amazing applications are another of the iPhone's strongest features. I can understand why Apple wants to keep the platform locked down to ensure the phone doesn't become unstable, just like the way Apple locks down the Apple TV media player. Personally, I think Apple wants you to hack the iPhone just like it wants you to hack the Apple TV. That way users can have all the functionality they want, but Apple doesn't have to support these features. Apple is expected to launch an iPhone App Store in June to support third-party applications, so hopefully in a little while it won't be necessary to hack the iPhone to run all those great apps. I'm tempted to buy this hacked iPhone from the US, although a lot of people think we could have an Aussie iPhone within 2 months. It partly depends on how much the Australian iPhone costs and whether or not it's 3G. If Apple expects me to pay $1,000 for a 2G iPhone, then they've got a rude shock coming, considering the same thing can be bought in from the US for less than $500. If they offer a 3G iPhone at a reasonable price, I'm more likely to be interested. My Jazz Jam contract with Telstra runs until January, so maybe I could fool around with a hacked iPhone until then, and then maybe upgrade to a Telstra 3G iPhone on next G. As always, with Apple, it's just a matter of wait and see.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, hopefully the wait and see isn't too much more wait and see. Adam, what were you saying about SMSs in there? We were talking in the middle of that. What does it do with SMSs?
It puts them, it displays them in a thread the same way that when you, you've got an instant messaging application on your screen and you can see the messages that you've, the last few messages you've sent and received.
Mm-hmm.
You can see your SMSs displayed on the screen in the same order.
That's okay. Cool. I like that idea.
Now, I don't use SMS a lot, so I don't care so much, but people seem to have conversations over SMS that probably cost them so much the idiot should have just made a phone call, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly.
For people who do that, it would be fantastic.
So it looks more like a chat line than an SMS browser.
Yes, it looks like a chat client.
The SMS, the telephone companies must be rubbing their hands together with
absolutely.
That. Who would have thought? Yeah. But I must admit, I run a device here, my mobile phone, which comes with a nice bit of software, and I talk from the laptop to the mobile phone regularly with you know, and the SMS software is on the actual computer. So I can't type on those little keypad things with my big thumbs for quids. So I use the software that comes with the phone on the laptop and talk to via my Bluetooth via my phone. So I'm having great fun harassing people from afar now via SMS, and I'm not even touching the phone.
And you can probably type correctly too, and put whole words in instead of half of words and things.
Yeah, too right. You can type real things. So I find that really good. But anyway, you guys were talking about the stylus before and the old devices.
Well, Adam was saying that he had an iMate.
Yeah, I've got an iMate.
By way of comparison, and I've got an iMate. The earlier one is a Jazz Jar.
Jazz Jar's a bigger one.
Bigger one. That was one of the first ones.
And I've got the original iMate, or the XDA2 as it was known.
The XDA2.
I've never gone down that path.
They all need a stylus, don't they? They're all touch screens, and you need to tap them.
Well, you can get by without a stylus.
Use your
fingernail.
You've got to have
a very finely sharpened fingernail.
Mm. Only some girls I know would probably suffice to that. But even the things that the courier guys come when they rock in and they say, here, sign
this,
and they
things.
Give you a stylus-y thing, and you squiggle down there and think, great, yeah. So, anyway, Optus have got on board with their 35-worded press release that was today.
Well, in the news, we had Vodafone was the first, but by the time that the news was recorded and done and dusted, Optus had come out with their announcement.
Yeah, that was just today, wasn't it?
3 o'clock this afternoon.
There you go.
There was some unofficial Optus stuff a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, they've all been kicking around for a while. But Vodafone came out at 4 o'clock last Tuesday and caught everyone by surprise. And,
including Apple.
Including Apple, because a few of us rang the Apple PR and they went, no comment. So it sounded like they weren't too thrilled. And then Optus came out with this one today.
And Apple have actually been advertising for jobs as well. There's been iPhone engineering jobs up on Seek, I think, for a little while. So
yeah, it's a bit of a giveaway, that.
Mm.
But if you look at Vodafone, they're a fairly sizable international or global company. And if you look at Singtel, which is Optus's parent company, they're pretty much along the same lines. They've got not just the Australian market. You know, they've got Singapore, India, the Philippines, and all that sort of stuff as well. Do you think Apple's giving favoritism to the global companies because Telstra ain't?
Well, it would make sense because then you've only got to cut one deal, and if
across many markets,
rather than mucking around with all these little pissy telcos who are, you know, should stick to their knitting. You can deal with a couple of big ones and get all these markets taken care of in one go.
That's right. You can leverage all the groundwork that you've done for other regions.
Makes good sense, really. It's like when we did the top 100 businesses last week globally. There wasn't one Australian company on there. Not saying Australian companies are not good in global marketplace, but I'm just saying it makes you pale into insignificance to some of these global players that are out there. So.
Now, JD, you haven't got one yet. Are you waiting until the 3G version? What's
I
the
am
story?
Waiting. I was interested in hearing Adam before say that he's going to use the Edge version, the 2.5 version, for a while. I'm quite happy to keep my iMate until the 3G version's out locally. I was certainly thinking about buying one internationally and hacking it to work here, but quite happy to sit back and wait for the right product that's tested and proven and working.
I think there's two types of Mac people, too. There's the people that actually, like your good self there, JD, who look at a piece of equipment and buy it based on the fact that it can do this and can do that, whereas you get other Mac aficionados, and I work with one, who buys because it's got those five letters on the actual back of the... Yep. I don't care what it is, I'll just buy it because it's got Apple on it.
A coffee cup.
Exactly right.
Can I just point out I've got 300 Apple computers at home, but I'm using a 10-year-old one at the moment.
Bragging again. and it's connecting to the wireless network. How's yours going tonight, Dr. Ron?
No, we need to speak to Graham about that.
That's where I think he's gone.
Wireless difficulty. He's gone to find a power supply.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Anyway, us with our mobile broadband.
One of the interesting things with the iPhone is the reports coming out are that they're out of stock in the US and the UK at the moment.
Okay.
Which means it looks like they're clearing everything out to bring the new 3G ones in.
All right.
So that's a big hiatus if they're not going to bring it in soon.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. That means they're going to be, 6-8 weeks where you can't buy an iPhone.
So what are we talking, the 29th of this month is the speculative opening of the iPhone? Next month, is it?
June. Oh, hang on, you're talking about the Apple Store.
Yeah, the Apple Store in Sydney that's touted. And then you've got the anniversary.
Sometime in June, I think. I can't remember.
So maybe they're going to release it globally or in Australia then, and there'll be a mass surge of... But you'd be able to buy one outright, surely. You don't have to be attached with any telco.
Well, the fact that it's now clearly going to be more than one telco is really encouraging because it means that they won't be able to screw you over as badly. Imagine if Telstra were the only telco that had the iPhone.
Oh,
imagine how badly
remortgage
they would
the
screw
house.
You for it. Yeah.
So you can buy it outright for $15.99 or something ridiculous.
Or $400 if you go to overseas.
And the same rumour mills that we're talking about multiple carriers, we're also talking about Apple stores and retailers being able to resell them as well. So that would suggest you could buy one outright without any connection to a telco.
I'm also looking at the Apple website as we speak in the iPhone page. They're rumouring, or not rumouring, they're actually stating that Apple announces iPhone 2.0 software beta. Maybe this is the reason why they're also clearing out existing stocks, because they're moving to the new OS.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. The new iPhone will run the version 2.0 firmware.
And it's got 16 gig.
Yeah, there's 8s and 16s. But at the moment, if you had a friend who could walk into a Californian Apple store for you today and buy two iPhones for you and a friend, they would be getting version 1.1.4. But like I said, those ones running firmware version 1.1.4 seem to be selling out, and there don't seem to be any more. So if you didn't get one of them, then what you will probably end up with is a version 2.01. Sorry, 2.0 phone, not 2.01.
Adam, why did you go the 8-gig version over the 16-gig version for the sake of $100?
Because 8 gig's more than I need anyway. I only put a few albums on. I've got a 1-gig iPod, and I've never filled it because I just put 3 or 4 albums on it that I like, and that's enough because I don't commute. I work from home, so I don't commute anymore.
You're not the new Gen Y sort of people that actually just keep their entire record collection in their portable
music player. My friend Miff is like that.
Yeah.
You're sitting there watching Spicks and Specks, and she says, "I got this song on my iPhone, on my iPod. I've got this song on my iPod," and she does.
What's her name? Miff. Miff. Do you know Miff, dude?
No, not Miff Wallace.
Oh, right, about to say.
There are people who put their entire... But I don't see the point of putting your entire... But it depends. If you commute for 2 hours every day, then I can see why you'd want to do that. My commute is from the bedroom to the bathroom to the kitchen. So, really...
So the only peak hour is the cat.
Yeah,
absolutely.
How long is that? The traffic in the hallway is a killer.
Absolutely. Hey, we were talking about a retrieval of data off devices last week on the radio. And one of the growing areas, should I say, is the... How would you say the restoration of iPods, getting music and stuff like that, the sand-filled iPods that have been sat upon on the beach and all that sort of stuff? So, yeah, it just goes to show there's a lot of Gen Ys out there doing all that sort of stuff. So, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're all in this evening. We're running out of time, so we'll go on with other things after the break.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to.
She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on the, how does it go? It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And back again. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Turner and Justin Dunlop in the studio tonight with the loitering Graham Callaghan reading over everyone's shoulder and doing a bit of IT work at the same time. One of the competitors to the iPhone is BlackBerry, and they've just released a Bold, BlackBerry Bold. I know a lot of people with BlackBerries, but I've never been a fan of them myself. Anyone else with the equivalent opinion?
Tiny screen. Tiny screen.
But for what it was in its day, it was... pretty impressive, but
so do you think
I think it's been a bit left behind by technology.
Is it on its way out? Is this the end of the BlackBerry, despite the fact that they're coming out with a new gadget?
No, it's so entrenched in corporate culture.
And I think that's the key to it, isn't it? Corporate. It's a corporate device. Oh, always has been.
Yeah.
Does it have a calendar function?
I don't know.
I'm sure it has.
Yeah, it does. It has all the same functions as
a PDA, does it?
Windows
I'm pretty
CD
sure it's over time they've added all that stuff into it. I don't think it had all that when it began, but as other smartphones came out, I think they realised they had to go down that path or they were just going to become irrelevant. They were going to become the next Palm.
Because it started out being like a portable email device.
Pretty much, that was the primary function of it.
Yeah.
Because it's been around for a long, long time, hasn't it? So,
like I said, it's so entrenched in corporate culture that it's not going anywhere.
But tiny keyboard, tiny screen, and it was probably good at the time, but when you look at the iPhone and the fact that you can use your fingers, you don't have to look at a tiny little button and use a stylus and so forth, I think its days are numbered.
It'd be interesting to see if we got a touchscreen BlackBerry.
An email in from Mike Jacobson, who's listening to us in Perth at the moment. Hurry up, 3G iPhone. I have the domain official3iphone.com. Well, there you go.
Oh, he's cyber squatting.
Good on you, Mike. You send the cyber boys around to sort him out.
Absolutely. .com, nothing you can do about it. Anyway, the BlackBerry, Research in Motion has launched a new high-end version of the BlackBerry aimed at its core base of business users, but it hopes that the sleek device will also catch on in the broad retail market, as we've just been alluding to. The BlackBerry Bold, as the new smartphone is called, is the first BlackBerry to support high-speed HSDPA mobile data and comes with integrated GPS, Wi-Fi and a host of multimedia features. So they're definitely trying to compete with
That's got a lot in it. It's got GPS in it for location-based services. It's an HSDPA device.
Yep.
And it's got Wi-Fi in it as well.
Yep. It's going to retail between US$300 and thereabouts. So what's that? Probably about $320, $400 Australian?
With GPS in it.
It costs more than that here, though.
you're getting a lot of bang for your buck there for just $300.
HSDPA was pretty much essential. If you want to be taken seriously as a business tool these days, I think you've got to have that.
Yes, yes. Multiple SIMs if you're spendthrift, because on some networks it costs you plenty. But, yes, so there you go. The new BlackBerry coming out hopefully in the not-too-distant... Well, actually, it's out now, I think. I suppose Telstra will be selling it because they're normally a BlackBerry supporter, and one of you just go and whack a SIM in it and off you go. For those who use BlackBerries. I must admit, you see the emails you get from people with BlackBerries? You got one the other day, you were saying. Did it have sent by BlackBerry? It just seems to have magically put that on the bottom for some strange reason.
I can't remember, to be honest. When I send emails from my mobile telephone, which I rarely do, but sometimes I'm in a position where I need to, I've got it configured so that does have a tagline like that, so people know that I'm sending it from a mobile phone.
It's probably handy.
I've got the name, the from name changed as well. So instead of my name, it's got -3 mobile after it or something along those lines.
Yeah, Ron's phone is talking to you.
Yeah. So people know that that's the device I'm using. I do that out of choice.
Yeah, people send me large files to mine and it bounces back and they go, "Why is your message bouncing?" I said, "No, you're trying to send it to my mobile device as well." So, but anyway, that's just another by-the-by story. Moving right along, research suggests Microsoft overestimated Vista security.
No.
Say
it's not true.
No, like Bulmer said, well, it's just a work in progress. So.
Yeah, exactly. What do you expect from a beta?
Oh, dear. And everyone, he wonders why everyone's sitting on the fence waiting for the next Windows 7 to come out in the middle of, towards the end of next year. Goodness me. But anyway, security software vendor PC Tools released research today that suggests Windows Vista is not as immune from online threats as Microsoft had once suggested. Since Vista's release last year, Microsoft has hailed the operating system's security features. Some have even claimed the operating system would make antivirus software obsolete. PC Tools took that opportunity to examine Microsoft's claim and conducted research over 6 months with 1.5 million of its customers using ThefTFire antivirus software. I'm not familiar with that. But there you go. So they're actually out there trying to prove it. But I must admit, Microsoft have come up with some new interesting ways of doing security, especially with Server 2008, where this is what XP3 allegedly does. It puts some of that technology on an XP box so that it sort of does a bit of a check and quarantines a laptop or a PDA or whatever it is when it comes in and asks to roam. So, but why did you all titter so when we said Microsoft? You non-believers.
Yes, we had the issue last week, didn't we, with Service Pack 3 getting pulled at the last second, and then they've rolled it out.
The clash with one of their own products.
With their own products.
Yes, you would have thought.
Didn't you get the memo from
Chuckles
Bob?
And guffawing coming from the back of the studio here. Yes, but strange but true.
Yes. Another email from a listener from Andrew T. Hi, guys. First time I've listened from the stream. Where are you, Andrew? Not going to say where you are, okay. Apart from a few dropouts.
On the stream.
Obviously on the stream, that's why it drops out. We've just hit a rock. Obviously someone's damming us upstream or something. He usually listens to the podcast while he's out and about. He likes the music selection so far. Oh, there's a giveaway. Yes, there you go. You get music if you listen to us live on the stream when we go to air, but some of the other sessions, if you're listening to us on the 56-minute version, which goes out to some of the other stations too, you won't get any of those good things. Come and download the podcast and have a bit of a listen.
There's a bandwidth challenged version as well for people with mobile phones.
And that gets a bit of a download too, I've
noticed,
Dr. Ron.
Yeah.
So are we all stutter in that, or...?
No, it's just very thin.
It's very watery.
Very watery. But it suits some people.
The good thing, I like these links, these are great, Kevin, come and go. It's quite accessible for Tasmanians, apparently, because they've got a real broadband dilemma over there at the moment. That is, connectivity between the mainland and the island state has been brought to a trickle.
I just got an email in from Anna Corrin saying, stop stealing my segues. Yeah, it's going. It's reduced to a trickle.
Absolutely.
Oh, dear.
Aurora, which is the company which runs, or Aurora Energy apparently, which runs the cable that goes between here and there. Apart from the fact it carries electricity, it also has fiber optic sticky tape to it as well, which carries data.
It does, yep.
He's got a microphone over there. That's
good. Should carry data, Graham's saying, but it doesn't.
That's the Bestlink cable as opposed to the Telstra cable.
Oh, okay. There's two different cables
There's
that go there.
Cables.
There's a Telstra one and a Bestlink cable. So. Mm. But apparently, I think poor old Tassie's been left out of the ADSL 2 race for a long time. There's not many exchanges which are ADSL 2 exchange enabled down there. There's a website which is, we've had as a website of the week, ADSL2exchanges.com.au. Don't quote me on that, but it's very similar to that. And I think at the time we looked, there were only a couple of exchanges down there that had high speed broadband. Maybe they know the difficulties that the Tasmanians have getting connecting to the mainland.
Maybe they no longer have a senator who holds the balance of power.
Oh, you think it's political, do you, Adam?
Well, when they have a senator who holds the balance of power, they do very well. Well, better than they do when they don't.
Oh, yes.
That other website we mentioned at the start of the show, if you're keen just to tap in the address while you're listening to us, was digitaltasmania.org, and that one was sent through to us by Ben on the feedback address. Mm.
Well, in their local paper, the Mercury, the Tassie Mercury, as many as 2,500 Tasmanians are unable to use the most popular and cost-efficient internet access because technology installed by Telstra in the 1990s is now redundant. And Telstra says the problem of RIM black spots might not be fixed as the telecommunications giant shifts its focus to rolling out a new fibre optic network.
If it, that's a long way away.
I know.
Meanwhile, stiff.
But isn't Tassie a long way away?
Yeah. And what I said before, I was having a go at politicians, not Tasmanians. I realised it may have come out the wrong way. I've got friends who are Tasmanians.
Oh,
I
have
too. I value my safety.
No, Lonnie's a lovely place too. Jesus. So, but yes, I feel for the Tassies because there's nothing worse than being between a place where you just want to communicate with and you're throttled back because of a poor exchange, a poor cabling sort of system. You just can't get the flow through there. So
we touched on this a little bit last week. So
the
actual issue is that Telstra have got the main cable, the only cable that goes in. Basslink is a second cable that was laid just recently that runs power and is capable of fibre. And Aurora, who held the licence to operate that cable at the moment, doesn't think that it's in its commercial interest to actually open it up, because I think Telstra will just undercut them and they'll go bankrupt.
Yeah, they'll just screw them. Yeah. Mm.
But that's what Telstra does. That's why they are the monopoly. Despite they say they're not the monopoly. So, oh well. Sorry, Tassie. You'll just have to grin and bear it, or get a mobile device or something like that.
Go satellite.
Yeah. Well, at least that's one part of your problem solved.
You still need your uplink.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's a big expense too, isn't it? It's a lot of mucking around that you shouldn't have to go through.
Yes. ICANN, which is the international... do you remember what ICANN stands for? Name, numbers.
International Corporate...
something.
Assigned names and numbers.
Okay, if anyone knows, please email it through to us.
Graham will know. He has a look on his face like he knows.
Assigned names and numbers is right. I don't know the C.
Okay, anyway.
The C's the contentious one. Right.
Anyway, the boss of the of ICANN, who I believe is an Australian...
yes, nice guy too.
Yes. He's basically saying the business leaders are grossly underestimating their firm's reliance on the internet and risks of web-based threats. This is Paul Twomey, the president of the ICANN, speaking in a UK launch of a new risk management guide for chief executives and directors compiled by the British North American Committee. Twomey argued that C-level executives, whatever they are, in many companies still lack basic understanding of information security and the risks of intellectual property loss via web-based attacks. Now, I couldn't agree more with that. The number of people that I deal with, and probably you guys are all in the same boat too, who just have no idea about what a computer is and what can happen when it's connected to the internet, I'd say there'd be 99% of, CEOs, if not CFOs, if not...
Especially if you're a CEO, it's not your job to know this stuff.
No, but
you
then you've got...
You expect CEOs to know this stuff.
You've got this blind trust in your IT department. So you really, your IT manager can hold a company to ransom quite easily, really.
Is it in the same way that we'd have a blind trust in Microsoft if we were using the Mesh product? So this links beautifully, doesn't it, back into what we were talking about at the start of the show. It goes back security. Yes, here we go. Security versus usability. This is just it. You're putting as an employee, you're putting your faith in your IT staff that your data is going to be secure.
And which, I've forgotten which it was, and the question without notice, there was online sales company in the 90s that managed to lose their entire credit card file to the internet.
Mm.
Same issue. You're relying on the security of the company, or in this case Microsoft for Mesh, that they're going to protect all of this information on your behalf.
Like I said, don't put your credit card on it.
Mm. It's like Google, They've become the monolith that when a law enforcement agency comes to them and says, please tell us, they just say, no, go away.
Unlike Yahoo, who screwed over those Chinese bloggers. Do you know about that?
No.
Yahoo handed over the details of some Chinese bloggers and then they got thrown in prison. Thank you very much, Yahoo.
Handed the details over to the Chinese government?
Yep.
Thanks, Yahoo.
And locked them away. Thanks very much, Yahoo. Scum.
Yes. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel's in this evening, Dr. Ron. He's here.
Controversy aplenty.
Yes, we'll all be here next week, maybe. Adam Turner, Justin Dunlop, and Graham Callaghan loitering in the background at the moment. When we're back, we're going to talk to you about what Adobe's doing for Australian CS3 Photoshop users, of all things.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
We have an e-newsletter, if you didn't know. Some people subscribe to it. If you don't, you should, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. What we're going to be talking about tonight, primarily. And
that's why I always read it.
You want to know what we're talking about.
Did I win?
Very helpful. Yeah.
Did I win today? Was I first?
Hang on, I'm just having a bit of talk amongst yourselves while I push this button over here.
I must have been pretty close, because I'm usually up and working by then.
Yes, yes. No, normally it hasn't come up yet. Oh, here we go. No, I'm sorry you didn't.
Oh, what?
Congratulations to Adam Turner of adamturner.com.au. He did win. There you go. I was just kidding.
Yeah, there you go. I kind of say, I want names and numbers.
No, absolutely. 9 o'clock. Your second was Phil at Extreme Digital Media. There you go.
Oh, I've got to be faster than that, Phil.
Yeah, come on. So, yeah, visit our webpage, techtalkradio.com.au. You'll be able to click on the right-hand side down there and subscribe. So, and then we might read your name out if you open it at 9 o'clock when we send it out in the morning. We like it being on your desktop, very first thing when you log on, so that's why we do it at that time. Now, speaking of interesting things, Adobe, if you're not familiar with it, they make all sorts of interesting software from Acrobat through to Photoshop through to editing software, all sorts of things. But what they're going to try and do, in particular in Australia, is that we will be one of the first to receive Adobe Creative Suite 3 Design Premium Software as a subscription service. So maybe this is Adobe's way of saying, hey, stop downloading it online and doing all that, because it's a fairly pricey piece of software.
What's in Creative Suite 3?
You ask me who uses it regularly. It's Photoshop.
Yep.
And I believe...
Illustrator?
Yeah, that might be in the web... in the print side, I think. But anyway, it's Illustrator could be there, Dreamweaver could be there, Flash will definitely be there, and all that sort of web-related sort of thing. So
Dreamweaver used to be Macromedia. They get bought out, did they, by Adobe?
They were Flash. Flash was Macromedia as well.
Yeah, Adobe bought them out probably about 3 or 4 years back from recollection.
Oh, showing my age. Yep.
And then everything went very quiet on the Adobe...
Macromedia.
Yeah, Macromedia type sort of thing, so... Yeah. And I must admit, at work, I didn't upgrade to the CS3 version of Dreamweaver. I still found it to be the old version, the Macromedia version, seemed to be good. So I don't know what Adobe did to it. But anyway, we digress.
We digress.
According to Mark Coles, who's the Managing Director of Australia and New Zealand at Adobe, the service enables businesses that may not have the budget to purchase the entire suite to utilise Adobe software on a subscription basis. He commented that this provides opportunities for resellers to approach a new range of customers, because this is a fairly hefty price tag on the complete suite. You can buy something like Photoshop for, I think, around $1,200 to $1,400, and that's one product of it, and I think the whole suite, based on what you get, can be upwards of $2,500.
Ouch. Is that per seat, or is it for
yes.
a...
Ooh.
Because it costs you $129 a month for a 12-month contract.
Yes.
So that's, what, $1,600, $1,700 right there. So it must be a lot more than that.
They're recouping their, I guess, revenue over the period of 12 months as opposed to a one-off hit.
Now, so. It is expensive, but the software is regarded in the industry as being the best tool for the job, isn't it?
Yes, it is very much an industry standard. Photoshop is probably, I've born and bred on it, and everything you want to do with it is there. And
people doing graphics editing for a living, they wouldn't be without it, would they?
There's still some alternatives. There's Microsoft's Paint.
That's not an alternative, Andrew.
Why do you laugh?
Yes, what can we say, really?
But in all seriousness, that's what I was trying to think of.
Most people, the GIMP would do...
Do you remember
they need.
Corel? Corel Draw?
Corel Draw.
Way back.
I was walking through a computer shop recently, and I saw a latest version of Corel Draw, plastic wrapped and sealed. It was by itself on
the
shelf.
Did it have dust on it?
Yes, it did.
Gents, I just found it.
And a coffee mug.
Creative Suite 3 Master Collection. The full version is $4,500.
Ooh.
Thank you very much.
Ooh, now you know why people download it if they can.
$4,500 per seat? Imagine if you had a website design house, you had 10
design houses and publishers, and what they then make out of that, what their return on it, they probably, Adobe know they can charge that much, because these are $100,000 jobs or whatever, $1 million jobs.
If you were setting up a corporate website, that would be hundreds of thousands of dollars, wouldn't it?
I must admit, I've always bought the upgrades because my first version of Photoshop that I bought was actually back when Aldus used to run Photoshop. Now, that's going back many years.
As well.
And exactly. Photo Styler?
Yes. But see, that's how it works. Adobe's just bought everyone. It's a bit like Sony, a bit like Microsoft. You get them away, we'll buy you.
Yeah.
But my first version was Aldus, and then I went through and Photoshop 3 and 4, and I've just been buying upgrades ever since, so... it's the way to do it, but when you have to buy it first up, it hurts.
Rather than paying a license for what you think you're going to use, why don't they have some registry in there that when you run Photoshop out of the suite, it charges you a license fee for that for the month, but not for the rest of the products. So you only pay for what you use. Pay for what you use. That's a good term. User pay.
I think they've tried that before, haven't they? Well, not Microsoft people, but also say Adobe
pay
people.
Per save.
Yeah, looking at the Master Collection, there are so many applications in there. I can't imagine many people using all of them every month.
This is the whole story with Microsoft Office. Why do you pay for it when you don't use 95% of it?
That's right. Thing.
Yes, it's just that 5% you use all the time, really, isn't it? PowerPoint.
Well, that 5% probably comes from a free open source product as well.
But that's where I guess products like Office.net, with using the applications online in the cloud means that you're only paying for what you're actually using at the time, minute for minute almost, rather than this model, which is, you know, you're still paying the full fee. It's just being spread over the year.
They would be prepared to lose money on the online stuff. They just want to keep you using their stuff and using their formats. That's what it's all about. Because if you suddenly realize that the world doesn't revolve around Microsoft formats, Microsoft is screwed.
There might be an open standard out there somewhere.
Let's not get into the definition of open.
AMD unveils plans for many core chips. We were speaking a little bit about AMD and the lack of compatibility with XP Service Pack 3 before this evening, but AMD has updated its processor roadmap with plans for 6 and 12 core server chips in a move intended to recover lost ground on the rival Intel because... Yeah, Intel, I think probably about 2 or 3 years ago, AMD was certainly leaps, streets ahead in front of what Intel was, but now I think Intel are very much clawed back.
Yeah, all this Core 2 Duo stuff and whatever just blew AMD away in the sales area. 4 or 5 years ago, you would have said, yeah, get yourself an AMD box, but now it's not as easy a decision.
Yeah, so the Intel stuff's certainly taking ahead, and AMD said its first 45 nanometer chip, that's pretty small, a quad-core part codenamed Shanghai, is still set for delivery in the second half of 2008. And there'll be more that'll be 6-core processors and 12-core processors in the not-too-distant future. Wonder how the task manager's going to handle that. There'll be lots of little windows across the bottom there, won't there? And in other interesting news too, speaking of telcos, Optus is taking on Telstra with a 42 megabit per second 3G network very shortly. They're going to up the ante and put the pressure on Telstra. They announced...
So we'll get 42 megabits per second to our handsets. That's great.
To your new iPhone.
Yeah. When?
Absolutely. By 2010, apparently, allegedly.
2080 forever away.
They put this press release out just after they put out the 35 one today.
As my announcing son said, that's for ages.
Yeah, see that one distracted you. You grabbed that one and raced down and said, look.
Yeah.
And then they snuck this one in. Today's Optus announcement plans to expand its 3G network coverage next year to 98% of Australia.
Yeah.
That's the standard catch cry. Wherever you need it. Oh, no, hang on. Someone said that. Got in trouble for that. I don't think they can say that anymore. And we'll bring mobile speeds to 42 megabits per second by 2010. The telco is embarking on an investment program to expand its coverage from 96% to 98% by December 2009 in an upgrade which will cost $315 million.
This percentage stuff is junk. What actually matters is how good their coverage is. I've got a Vodafone wireless card and I've been using it all over Melbourne and Sydney. It's a supposedly HSDPA. I've never seen it hit the speeds, and I'm pretty confident the reason why is that their HSDPA network is so patchy that half the time you're not getting HSDPA. And they actually mix HSDPA and 3G together in their maps, so you can't actually tell if you're in a HSDPA area unless you ring customer service and argue with someone for 15 minutes like I did because I was testing this gear and couldn't find out it wouldn't work. I sat in Bourke Street Mall and I was getting GPRS speeds. I've sat at the Fox Studios in Sydney. I've done it with Telstra and 3 and it just worked. So Vodafone might have wide coverage, but if it's got holes in it and you're in a hole, then not so good.
I think all telcos are a bit guilty of that. How can you?
I'm sure they all are, but the worst Vodafone is one I've had the worst experience with so far. So you really need to find someone you know who's got it and test it the places where you want to use it.
Mm. Anyway, yes, get a card which tells you when you're using HSDPA. Mine glows yellow when it goes into HSDPA, or blue when we're on GSM, whatever, GPRS. So you can see what sort of network you're connected to at the time. GPRS being the old technology running
slowly.
Very, very slowly.
But remember,
like being in Tasmania,
3G doesn't necessarily equal HSDPA either.
It doesn't.
There's a first incarnation of 3G, which is the wideband CDMA.
HSDPA is CDMA off.
No,
why confuse the issue? He's messing
Andrew,
with you. Come
on,
don't
stop
listen
it
to him.
there's a first version of 3G, which there are hundreds of thousands of handsets out there, including mine, which are using that version, which are not HSDPA compatible. So HSDPA is still very new.
Okay. Now, because we're running out of time this evening, we have to wrap up. I'm going to jump all over the rundown, and I'm going to throw this one at you, because how many of you grew up playing Atari video games? Do you remember the old Atari boxes and stuff like that?
I'm trying to remember if I owned an Atari. Don't think I ever
had a Commodore
64. I had an Intellivision games computer.
Did you?
Yeah. It would have been about the same vintage. JD?
I only ever played Pong and then bought my Apple II.
So you went from Pong to Apple II.
What's the difference?
Never look back.
Ah, dear.
I can play Pong on the iPhone.
Can you?
Tell us about Atari.
I'm sorry, we get awfully distracted. Atari confirmed today that the NASDAQ listing qualifications panel will delist the video games firm in the beginning of potentially the end of what was once a very, how could you say, forefront company in what they did with video games and vector graphics and things like that. They did some amazing things, came out with some amazing games. NASDAQ have decided, they're suspending the trade of Atari shares effective of the opening of business probably about 2 days ago by the time we read the press release. So, the end of an era. Atari said that it plans to request a review from the NASDAQ listing and hearing review council, which could alter the ruling. However, it added that such request will not delay the suspension of trading. So, there you go. One of the IT companies falling off the top of the IT sort of
sign of the times.
It is a bit. Whereas you got the others, Google and all that are just powering ahead. The world's richest brand name company, which we spoke about last week too. But I must admit, Apple did have a very good growth sector last year, and I reckon it's all because of the iPhone. 123% was their brand growth. Not bad for a company. But the BlackBerry was doing amazing things too, because that was even bigger than Apple, but they were way down the list. They were about 40 or 50, I think, down there. So there you go. And, just briefly before we go too, Microsoft, they've got a lot of security patches coming out. Microsoft has given advance notice of 4 security patches for this month's Patch Tuesday on 13th of May. So depending upon when you listen to this, that was probably last Tuesday. So keep an eye on all those things. Watch your servers. They'll probably reboot if you've got it enabled to do that. And if you've got Service Pack 3 on, well, just hang on.
Good luck. Hold on tight.
I'll let you know.
Enjoy the ride.
I'll let you know next Monday what's happened. The other interesting bit of gossip too, Microsoft in talks to buy Facebook. They've missed out on Yahoo, so then they're moving to Facebook. Microsoft has been speaking with social networking giant Facebook about the possible acquisition, according to reports. That's the Wall Street Journal starting those sort of rumours over there. Walt Mossberg.
Will become
a very, very respected journalist too, just quietly.
Facebook space or something, won't it?
Yeah.
My book. Face space.
Micro who. We were coming on
micro
little
who?
Names.
Yeah, yeah, micro face now.
Micro face.
My face. My face. Have you been on my face? Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
And free
it's getting late.
Free software takes on Microsoft Office. Yes.
No, don't stop now, son.
I think
keep digging.
Plow on regardless.
Keep digging.
It's late night. I think we best go to this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Yeah, I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a second, give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilometres. Don't open hands with those people that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
Well, this time, to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions.
Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
How long does your laptop battery last, Andrew?
I've got a power plugged into it tonight.
That's good.
Normally about 2.5 to 3 hours.
2.5 to 3 hours?
Yeah.
JD?
Well, it tells me 5 hours when it's fully charged, but I don't believe it.
It's a Mac.
I get about 3.5 out of my MacBook. 3.5. This week's gadget is the Voltaic Systems Voltaic Generator Solar-Powered Laptop Bag. The Voltaic Generator is the first solar bag powerful enough to charge a laptop. So it's a soft bag that you put your laptop in, and it's got solar cells on the side. Uses high-efficiency cells to generate maximum power in the limited space available. It includes a battery pack custom designed to efficiently store and convert the electricity that's generated. It can also charge cell phones and most other handheld electronics. The solar panel generates up to 14.7 watts, which is powerful enough to fully charge a typical laptop from a day of direct sunlight. How good's that?
That's all right.
Excellent.
So if you're working a skyscraper, you've got to hang your bag out the window to charge your notebook.
Yeah, hanging over the back of your the back of your chair facing the sun, and it'll charge.
And a good thing, it's renewable energy and it's free.
This is what I liked
about
it.
Not for the bag. Anyway, how much is the bag?
It does. Hang on to your price tags. $5.99 US, but you can buy them online from www.voltaicsystems.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is a website, and it's a bit of a little software application as well, especially with after our discussion this week of security online and the cloud and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Secure.logmein.com. If you go to secure.logmein, L-O-G-M-E-I-N.com, LogMeIn have got a vast array of products for doing this exact sort of thing. Online networking, virtual private networking, connecting computers together over the internet and sharing data. The product that I had to play around with during the week with Matthew Robinson, who lives in Denmark and is a frequent contributor to the program, is a package called Hamachi. It's an instant zero configuration VPN application. It's a virtual private networking application. There's versions for Windows, Linux, and OS X. If you install Hamachi on each machine, you can see the other person's Windows shares.
Okay.
Over the internet.
Oh, cute. Security.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
Or you can tell it to look at the Windows shares or to set custom shares. But we just said, look at everything so we can get it going. And it worked extremely well. So you can actually share drives, share files, and
what's it called? I like this.
Secure.
I like the sound of this.
Yeah. The website is logmein.com, and the product is called LogMeIn's Hamachi. So I thought I'd make that the Texas Radio website of the week. We'll put the links in the show notes.
You're good.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Graham Henley spoke to us last week about data recovery.
He did. It was very good, too. I learned a lot.
A gentleman by the name of John Edwards in the United States does what Graham Henley does. He recovers precious data from computers that are wrecked in floods and fires. Now, Edwards may have set a new standard. He found information on a melted disk drive that fell from the sky when the space shuttle Columbia disintegrated in 2003.
That's an excellent effort, really, isn't it?
Edward said, when we got it, it was two hunks of metal stuck together. We couldn't even tell
it's
it was a hard
re-entry
drive.
Hasn't it?
It has.
Yes.
It was burned and the edges were melted. He's an engineer at Kroll OnTrack outside Minneapolis. He said it looked pretty bad at first glance, but we always give it a shot. During Columbia's fateful mission, the drive had been used to store data from a scientific experiment on the properties of liquid xenon. Most of the information was radioed to Earth during Columbia's voyage, but Edwards was able to recover the remainder, which allowed researchers to publish the experiment in the April issue of a science journal, Physical Review.
Fantastic.
There you go. So it was a good salvage effort.
It's pretty amazing to get information off. Yes.
He said it was also, the recovery was also made possible because the computer that was running was using DOS. And DOS doesn't scatter data all over the drives like modern operating systems do and modern file systems. So
Excellent.
It's a good, interesting odd spot.
Well done. Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we have Michael Cremean coming in to talk to us about mixing audio and cinema and stuff like that. He's a sound engineer who works on many television programs and mixed feature films and things like that. And if you've ever wondered how to set up your surround system in your home, how to do it, where to put your speakers and do all that sort of stuff, this will be the show to have a bit of a listen to. Man who does it professionally, and he mixes stuff. And we'll talk to him about why the commercials on commercial television just seems that little bit louder than what the program does.
Yeah, because they run them 6 dB higher than the...
No.
He's going to dispel the myths, is he?
They don't. That's okay. The thing, and we'll tell you what they do and how they do it. But no, they legally don't run it, because when you submit a commercial to Free TV Australia, you must tell them that it's the right level.
Ah,
we'll tell you exactly what to do.
So trustworthy.
Absolutely. Speaking of trustworthy...
Yes.
Anna Corrin, eat your heart out. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Adam.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you for Wednesday.
You guys have got really good sources of information.
On that note, before we embarrass him any further, we're in for it now, aren't we? Absolutely, quick, let's run. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hopefully, we'll be on air next week. So, yes, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.